This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
Good afternoon, everybody. Well, it's day one.
Virginia got a new governor last week, Republican Glenn Youngkin, and he got right to work.
I'm going to sign 11 executive actions, 9 executive orders, and 2 executive directives.
One of those executive orders essentially overrides the authority of Virginia school districts when it comes to one key tool to control the COVID pandemic.
As we battle COVID, it's parents that should decide the health measures taken for their children. That's why I signed an executive order that allows parents to opt out of mask mandates in schools. This is a matter of individual liberty.
In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis, also a Republican, signed a similar bill in November.
I don't know why the masks have politics around it. Let the parents make the decision that's best for their kids. If you want the masks, do it. If you don't, don't. That's fine.
While some parents see this as a win for their children,
they need to see their teachers' mouths move. They need to see their classmates' mouths move.
Other parents see this very differently. In both states, parents have filed lawsuits opposing these policies that essentially make wearing masks optional. But in this debate over individual liberty and how much say parents should have on COVID measures in schools, there are a few key voices being left out of the conversation.
The parents who are generally complaining are not in the schools. We are. Every day we see this, we are the ones experiencing this, whereas the parents only hear it secondhand, maybe third hand.
Consider this. There are a lot of opinions about how schools should be run during the pandemic. But what about the people who actually have to show up in the classroom? What's it actually like in the hallways, the cafeterias, and classrooms for the students and teachers trying to protect their own health and their education and livelihoods? That's coming up. From NPR, I'm Michelle Martin. It's Saturday, January 22nd.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
When the economic news gets to be a bit much,
listen to The Indicator from Planet Money. We're here for you, like your friends, trying to figure out all the most confusing parts. One story, one idea, every day, all in 10 minutes or less.
The Indicator from Planet Money, your friendly economic sidekick.
From NPR.
On this week's Wildcard, we talk with Issa Rae about those moments where our lives could have gone another direction.
Definitely wasn't supposed to be with that guy at all. But I still think about it.
I'm Rachel Martin. Issa Rae tells us how to make peace with the path not taken. That's on the Wildcard podcast from NPR, the game where cards control the conversation.
It's Consider This from NPR. A familiar scenario is playing out in schools across the country, due in no small part to the latest COVID variant, Omicron. Researchers said it would be highly contagious, and they were right. And that scenario sounds like this. Classes start up again after winter break. They meet in person. There's a rise in infections among students and staff. Then come the student absences and staff shortages. Meanwhile, school administrators are weighing whether closing schools to in-person learning hurts some students more than others. Those who depend on school for a warm meal, for example, or who don't have adequate access to the internet at home, or who have learning differences that make it hard to focus. It all plays into a familiar, often fierce, and sometimes ugly debate about what COVID protocols are necessary to ensure the safety of students, teachers, and staff. Over the past few weeks, students have started weighing in by walking out.
We are packed into the school, shoulder to shoulder, every day. We're here without proper ventilation. We're here with no social distancing in our classroom.
Students across the country are staging walkouts to draw attention to what they are seeing and experiencing in their classrooms. Haven Coleman is one of those students. She's a sophomore at Thomas Jefferson High School in Denver, Colorado.
Our goal has been trying to make in-person as safe as it can for everyone, because everyone deserves to have the access to a good education.
One of the arguments for keeping schools open is that in-person instruction is usually better. But Eliana Smith, a senior at Cedar Ridge High School in Round Rock, Texas, says that with so many school staff affected by COVID right now, this just isn't true in many classrooms.
When a teacher's out for 2 weeks, we're just spending 2 weeks doing busy work, doing worksheets on our computers, not learning at all. And obviously, that's not their fault, but we're not learning in our classes.
Haven Coleman is seeing these absences in her school in Colorado.
Currently, we have so many teachers that are missing because of COVID, as well as students. I know at least at our school, we had 40 to 30% of our students at our school missing the first 2 weeks back from the semester.
In light of these troubling absences, Eliana, Haven, and many of their peers walked out of school this week over a list of strikingly similar demands. Both want high-quality masks like N95s to be provided to every student. They want routine testing, better social distancing measures in the hallways, and access to outdoor spaces during lunchtime. In other words, they want to feel like their school districts are doing everything they can to protect their communities against the virus while providing a sound education. But like everything having to do with the pandemic, there is no consensus among students over the best way to do that. Student protesters also come from different socioeconomic backgrounds, and they're responding to different COVID protocols in different ways. In Montgomery County, Maryland, sophomore Daniel Pulacki and his classmates staged a walkout on Friday to press their demands.
We're trying to push MCPS to get a sense of virtual learning for about 2 weeks.
The Montgomery County Public School System has been moving to virtual learning if schools report positive COVID cases in more than 5% of unrelated students and staff members over a 2-week period. But the policy has some loopholes, and Daniel believes his school is over that 5% threshold. He says he doesn't feel safe.
And I just felt like none of our voices were being heard.
Ian McNeely attends a different high school in Montgomery County, but has the same concerns.
They're not particularly transparent about what's going on. And that's been an issue raised not just by us, but by, I think, the administrators union and the teachers union as well.
Ian and his classmates at Northwest High School in Germantown, Maryland, also want to return to remote learning, at least temporarily.
We agree that virtual learning is not ideal. You know, grades go down, mental health is impacted. But really, it's the only option when the alternative is the virus. For me personally, and I can really only talk about my own perspective, I am not doing so well, and I can tie that directly to the COVID situation.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Stearns & Foster. To Stearns & Foster, your comfort is their everything. So they've made a mattress that's irresistible inside and out. Every Stearns & Foster mattress is handcrafted. Every stitch, every layer uses the finest materials, like indulgent memory foam and ultra-conforming IntelliCoils for the coziness you want with the support you need. Timeless quality for your most comfortable sleep. Stearns & Foster, what comfort should be. More at stearnsandfoster.com.
The economy right now is bewildering, impenetrable, inconceivable.
Not when you have the Indicator podcast in your ears. In under 10 minutes every day, we simplify the complicated news like...
How does inflation drop? What the heck is a SPAC? Why are trendy little high-fiber sodas suddenly dominating store shelves?
And more. Listen to The Indicator from Planet Money and NPR.
Physical as well as mental health, childcare for faculty and staff, educational benchmarks, meal support, internet access, transportation. School administrators have a lot to consider when deciding how to best educate and protect students during the pandemic, all while navigating the external pressures of parents and local governments. I spoke to someone who understands how messy this all is. That's Diane Lundholm. She is a veteran teacher, and she's also a parent of two high school students. They're all just trying to get through the year.
I am surviving like everyone else, showing up.
Lundholm teaches Spanish in Chandler, Arizona at Hamilton High School. In Arizona, around 58% of the population is fully vaccinated. That's lower than the national vaccination rate. Not to mention her school has an optional masking policy. So I asked her how this latest COVID surge is affecting how her school is operating this semester.
Unfortunately, there have not been many changes in the way the school is operating. And we're seeing more absences among students. We're also seeing a severe shortage of teachers that are showing up. I was one of them myself. I tested positive on the 5th of January, and school started for us on the 4th. So I didn't present the entire first week of school, and 2 days out of the second week of school, I didn't see my students either.
How are you feeling, by the way? You just kind of dropped that little bomb in there that you yourself got COVID. How are you doing?
I'm tired. That post-COVID fatigue is real. But other than that, I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
So I understand the school remains open for in-person learning. And I understand that your school has an optional masking policy. Do most staff and students wear masks or not?
No, I would say not most. And it's kind of shocking to me, especially returning, that more are not wearing masks in, you know, reaction to the surge.
You know, we like to think that parents and schools and students are generally on the same page about things that affect kids. But this seems to be a situation where people are not all on the same page. And so I just wanted to ask, because you're a parent.
Yes.
Your kids attend this school.
Correct.
And you're a teacher. And so I want to ask you, because you embody all of these identities in your household, are teachers generally of accord here about whether they would like to be in person or teaching virtually? What is your sense of that?
I think there's a general consensus that our students do better in the classroom. I don't think anybody would argue that. But the logic should be that we need to try and contain this so that we can teach longer in person for the remainder of the school year.
What about as a parent?
I can tell you as a parent that I like having my children in school. You know, it's their senior year, but I'm never going to put the social importance of going to school and seeing their friends ahead of the health of a community, right? I really think it's really important to look at the effect that it has on the community versus just my individual child. And I'm going to stress the longest we ever went virtual was only for a quarter here, which is about 10 weeks. And so, again, as a parent, we want them to be in person because we believe it's better for them socially, but also because better teaching is taking place. Or we feel that if they're kept at home, let's say when they're quarantined or sick, and other students are there in person, we don't want to put our students in a situation where they're going to fall behind in comparison to another student. What we're really seeing, the reality of having everybody come back in person, is that quality of education, it's just not a reality. Because we have so many teachers that are out absent currently, and we don't have the substitutes necessary to be manning those classrooms, a lot of students are really just sitting in classrooms right now without real teaching taking place because that teacher isn't there. Or teachers that are there present are so stressed right now covering for their peers and giving up their prep periods. We're kind of in crisis mode ourselves, and you're spread so thin. And the stress from being in this environment also affects the quality of your teaching and the quality of your planning. And when we're in a situation like we are right now, we're in a surge that's sending us into crisis mode, nobody can be at their best. The teachers aren't at their best. Administration's not at their best. Students aren't at their best. They're stressed out because they see the same thing. You know, my students lived that this week, and my daughters, who are seniors at the high school, are also experiencing it in their other classes, you know, when their teachers aren't able to be there or their teachers don't have the time to prepare correctly because we're being spread so thin.
That sounds really, really frustrating.
It's discouraging, and we're seeing the effects of it with many teachers, you know, going in for retirement earlier than they were planning or just questioning how much longer they can do this. It's been very difficult. I really, really honestly believe that this second year of COVID has been much more difficult than last year. And I've seen many, many more teachers just continuing with that mantra, like, how much longer can I do this? It's deep breathing and going back in.
Do you feel like it's a safe environment for your kids and for you?
I do not. I do not feel safe going in there. And the reason, again, I don't feel safe is because a lot of the mitigation measures are optional. And when you have optional mitigation measures that not everybody's on the same page about, then you really end up with no mitigation measures. These mitigation measures should be layered. We're talking about social distancing, masking. We're talking about the vaccinations. You know, without layered mitigation, there is no true mitigation. And because of that, I don't feel safe.
That was Diane Lundholm. She teaches Spanish at Hamilton High School in Chandler, Arizona. It's Consider This from NPR. I'm Michelle Martin.
Moms know the ups and downs of life. It's what makes them great subjects for books.
This is one of the things that fiction can do, right? It can give us a window into the battles that each person is waging or facing, but it doesn't mean that we condone her actions.
This week on NPR's Book of the Day podcast, we are discussing books centering mothers. So call your mom, then tune into the Book of the Day podcast from NPR.
With more and more information coming at you all day, every day, it can be hard to know where to focus. The new Consider This newsletter from NPR can be that focus. Every weekday afternoon, we take one of the day's biggest stories and break it down in a simple, skimmable format so you can get a better grasp of one important topic and what it means for you in a couple of minutes. Sign up for free at npr.org/considerthisnewsletter. There's a lot to stay on top of on any given day. You might have to break things down into smaller pieces in order to keep up. That's why we're introducing the new Consider This newsletter from NPR. Every weekday, we sift through all the day's news and bring you one big story in an easily skimmable format, so you become a mini expert on a major topic each day. Sign up for free at npr.org/considerthisnewsletter.